Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 106, with Sarah Kornack and Beth Ann Schwamberger. Today on the show, we're talking with Kim Van Slambrook of Lucy Jane Totes. Kim has lots of great advice for us, but her photography tips towards the end of the episode, I think, are fantastic. She has really great tips for producing great photographs in a time-efficient way, and they're unlike any tips I've ever heard before. So stay tuned for that section of the interview. I know you'll find that helpful. Let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today on the podcast, we are pleased to welcome Kim Van Slambrook of Lucy Jane Totes. Kim began sewing her awesome extra large tote when she needed a tote that was large enough to suit her needs, and she couldn't find one anywhere. The business has grown a lot since then. Kim and her husband live in Louisville, Kentucky with their twin boys. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you for having me.
So, Kim, could you begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself, your family, and how you got started in business?
Well, let's see. I took probably the most unconventional route to becoming a handmade business owner or creative entrepreneur. I actually have a civil engineering degree from Purdue University, which is where I met my husband, who's also a civil engineer, and did my emphasis in structural design. Quickly figured out through an internship that was not the right route for me, but went ahead and graduated with a degree. So my husband, Doug, went on to stay in the field of civil engineering. And after college, we lived in Chicago and got married and then ended up having our twin boys, George and Teddy. And from there, I think our boys by the age of five lived in three states and five different cities. So my husband's job had us move quite a bit. He does like large bridge design and is more project related. So we are currently in Louisville, Kentucky for about the next year, and then we will move again to destination unknown at this time. So my route to the handmade business kind of, and I've heard a lot of people in different podcasts, you know, sort of the accidental entrepreneur. So when our boys were about a year old, prior to ever making the tote bags, they're very thin and all of their pants were falling off. So I went to the mall to look for a kid's belt. And the only one that we could find was at Janie and Jack for, I think they were something like $18 or $20 each. And I decided that looking at the belt, that's something I could probably make. So I went home and got out my sewing machine and made belts for our boys, and then had other friends ask if they could buy one from me or if I could make them one. And so that kind of started my, I guess, newfound love of sewing and making things. So the first bag that I made, I actually looked at one online. And this is where I think the only time I've really used my civil engineering degree truly, I actually scaled the bag based on the measurements to kind of get an idea of the proportions and made my first purse, which I then carried and again had different friends sort of say, I really like that, can you make me one? And then I decided to make the extra large tote, which was really the thing that kind of took things off to where they are now.
That's really interesting how your husband's job moves your family around so much. You know, it kind of reminds me of those of us who are military families. And I would think that you would almost want to, like, have a project last as long as possible so you wouldn't have to keep moving on.
Yeah, the project that we're on right now is a big cable stay bridge. So it's actually, I think the total will be here is 3 to 4 years. So it's nice. It's been enough time that you can get established in a community. The boys, luckily before any of these moves, they hadn't really started kind of formal school. So with this move, they started kindergarten and will go through about probably the end of this year, second grade, maybe start third grade, which is just crazy to think about. And then we're hoping that we'll do maybe one more move, and then he'll move into more of a role that keeps us in one place for longer. So it's great for my business that, you know, I've kind of ended up going the route that I have, because I can work from anywhere. And I think for me in the moves, this probably sounds odd, but a sense of identity. So when we kind of move someplace new and I feel like, oh man, I don't know anyone and I'm not really familiar with the community, it's kind of like I have a built-in something to focus on, and, you know, my business is sort of that constant for me.
Oh yeah, definitely. I know we just very recently moved to San Diego a few months ago, and it was from all the way across the country, and I felt the same way, that having that thing that wasn't going to change, which was, you know, our podcast and our Etsy shop, yeah, that helped a lot. And it's been kind of fun to see as we grow. And then we moved to a new place. There were already ladies who knew me online who said, oh, you're coming to San Diego? Oh, let's meet up. So that was pretty fun, too. So I'm curious, with your business, did you first set up shop on Etsy? Is that how you kind of got the ball rolling?
I did. I had, you know, the different sales locally, which I think for me was kind of the good confidence booster to take the leap to then put things online. So when I first started my Etsy shop, I actually sold kind of a hodgepodge of things. I did some like pillowcase dresses, which at the time were really popular, some nursing covers, and the tote bags. And when we made our one move, I decided to, I was taking an online class, and it kind of had you really think out what you wanted your product to be and what you wanted under your product umbrella. And when I did that, I realized that what I really loved to do were more of the tote bags. And so in that time, I actually had one of my nursing covers was in Pregnancy and Newborn magazine. And so it was a little bit difficult to make the decision to take away a product that had gotten some press. But I also felt like at the time, our boys were in preschool and we were in a small town, so they were only doing 3 mornings a week from 9 to noon and really didn't have any other form of daycare. So I felt like focusing on the one tote bag, which I really loved, and I felt like it was something more unique at the time that it was harder for people to find, really set me apart. And when I did that, I actually had, I think that was the point when my sales really took off and my shop felt more cohesive and had more of a brand identity than it did when I was selling a variety of items.
That's really interesting that you took such a big risk to remove a product from your shop. And in the end, that turned out to be, sounds like a fantastic business decision, just focusing on that one thing. I feel like focus is always something that it comes down to that as a great entrepreneurial success. Don't you think, Bethann? So many times we interview somebody and it's the focus that turns out to make such a huge difference.
Oh, definitely. I would agree that narrowing down that niche, which I think when you first start out, though, it's tricky. Sometimes you maybe don't know quite what's going to stick or be your passion or whatever. But yeah, once people do narrow down and double down on like what's working or what they've decided is going to be that path, yeah, it seems to make a big difference.
I think the other advice that came out of the class was basically to identify what you want your overall brand look to be. And even if there's something that, like a fabric that you absolutely love, but when you put it together with the rest of, you know, the tote bags or the purses or the accessories, it doesn't fit, is basically that's not the right thing to include. Even if you love it, it's not the right thing to include in your items. My husband always, it's funny because he's such more the engineer, you know, makes $100,000 decisions kind of thing. So sometimes our conversations are so different, and yet he kind of is very insightful and has good advice. And his comment was, if you look at a successful restaurant, most of the most successful restaurants have really focused small menus. And so almost there are times when maybe I'll think, oh, I want to add, you know, kind of more the dreamer. he'll bring me back to reality and say, well, is that really, are you staying as focused? So I'm actually getting ready to start making some new products, but they would still fit within kind of my having something that's very useful, very well designed type of items.
Are we going to get any hint?
Ooh, steak and...
We don't have to.
No, they. I mean, it's similar to, like, I just added, so I had the totes for a while, and that was basically what I could manage for the amount of orders. And I actually, there was a period of time that I closed my shop. It was probably for about a year, which, again, it was a period where things were really rolling. I was getting a lot of sales and a lot of good publicity, I guess you could say. But I also felt like because I wasn't in a situation where I had a really good daycare situation, my work time was falling basically from about 8 until midnight, which was fine for a period of time. And then I started turning into kind of, I guess, mean mommy. Like I just, you know, I wasn't getting enough sleep, and I felt like I was being pulled from every direction. And so I felt, you know, I always look at, like, what will I regret the most? And for me, my biggest regret would be if I kept pushing my business and, like, my kids or our family suffered. And so I turned the shop off, and then after a year, we were in a situation where I felt like I could, you know, the boys were starting school and the schedule was better. So I turned it back on, and it was a little bit difficult to get back up to that momentum, but it came back, and, you know, looking back, I think that was the best decision for us.
You're just full of brave decisions, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But I think we can all relate to that. I know that if I am too stressed with things on my plate, with the business or with the family in the home, or if I don't get enough sleep, I am not the type of mom I want to be. I lose my patience much more easily. And I agree, in the grand scheme of things, my relationship with my children and my family and my husband is far more important than how the business turns out in the end. So that would have been a tough decision to make, but I'm glad it's worked out for you and your family and the business as well.
Yeah, and I think it gave me time, too, to come back with a new energy and a new focus and now look at where I want things to go. And, you know, now that the boys are in school, the summers are still a little tricky, but for the school year, now I have a better focus on where I want to be.
I'll tell you what, these summers are so tricky. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I need to have a grand plan for next summer, I feel like. It is really complicated to fit it all in, I feel like, in the summertime.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Day camp, Sarah, next summer. Find a few. It doesn't have to be all summer long, but, man, Holden is loving gymnastics camp this week, and it feels like, you know, a bit like, oh, a little preschool schedule, you know, so.
Yeah, fun for him, break for you.
Yeah. We also do every summer now, the boys go to, my dad passed away when I was younger, so they go to my mom's for a week, and we call it Camp Grandma. So it's great because it gives me just a solid week to, my husband and I joke around because he has a really crazy schedule but absolutely loves what he does, and I love what I do, and so I say that I'm pretty sure if we didn't have the boys, the two of us would be the extreme workaholics because we both just, we love what we do. So therefore, it's easy to get lost and, you know, put in like a 12-hour day and not even realize it. So we spend that time for him to get caught up on work, for me to work a lot. But then, because we don't have bedtime and everything, we can have like a date night every night. So it's a good time for us to connect more. And then the boys love going to my mom's. And so it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, perfect. I think Camp Grandma should be a month long or so.
Oh, man. Well, Kim, I know we were talking a bit about your, you know, focusing and really having that cohesive style for your products and your website. And your website, at Lucy. I'm looking at your store right now, LucyJaneShop.com. It is just beautiful. It is, I mean, your pictures are clean and bright, and I see that cohesive style and look that we've been talking about. Did you design your website yourself? Did you take your own photographs, or were you outsourcing some of this?
I did all the photographs myself, and then the website is through the website platform is Shopify, which I think most people are familiar with. And so that was, it's a template, and then I went in and changed everything up so that it would meet my branding, basically. I attempted one time to hire someone to do an e-commerce website for me, and in the end, it kind of ended up being a little bit of a disaster because I think that I had a clear vision of what I wanted, and the design that they were coming up with really wasn't that, and we were so far in that I ended up just paying the rest of the amount and didn't use it. So I think that was kind of my lesson that, and I love learning, so I am kind of, like, I am not intimidated to just keep Googling until I can figure out how to add some code or change things or kind of teach myself, like, Adobe Illustrator. But I also figured out that it was the best way to kind of keep all of the vision what I had in mind and not end up with a totally different look than I was originally thinking.
And when did you make this switch to Shopify, or not switch, when did you add Shopify to what you're doing in addition to Etsy?
So I added Shopify about a year ago, and part of that, well, I feel like, and I've heard other people say this, you know, you don't own Etsy. Just like the whole push to have newsletter subscribers versus having, you know, Facebook followers or Instagram followers, because in the end, those are yours, like you own them. So I felt somewhat the same way with starting my own website. And was also, to me, Etsy has changed quite a bit from when I first started selling on there in 2010. They opened up to where it was originally you could only sell something if you were the one that physically made it. And now it's open to if you can buy a tote bag wholesale from China and put a monogram on it and then sell it as handmade on Etsy. And so I feel like I love Etsy. I get a lot of traffic to it. I think it has amazing search engine optimization. I think it's a great way for someone if you want to start selling, because it really, there's not much risk involved, and you get an area where people can search and find yourself. But I also felt like it's changed a lot in, having people contact you and say, well, I can get this tote bag for this amount, and really distinguishing that it's a handmade item that's completely, like, handmade from start to finish. And then my other reason for switching was because I added on some more customization and more, like, the monograms. And on Etsy, I felt like that was a little bit harder to put on there in a way that made the shopping easy.
Yeah, I'm curious now, what percentage of your sales currently come from your Etsy shop versus your own website?
I think that it really depends on what's happening. If I have someone mention my items and, you know, say it's on Instagram, and on Instagram I have linked my Lucy Jane shop, I will have a spike in my sales for the Shopify site. I would say that my most consistent sales are still through Etsy and through that searching, but I also have not probably put all of the hustle and effort into the Shopify getting that name out there as much. It's split. I think it just depends on what's happening. The Shopify site more would be if someone mentions it through social media, or if someone finds my products through social media, then that's where they would land. And then I think I have a good amount of traffic just from people doing, like, Google image searches, because between my Etsy shop having the longevity and my blog having quite a few pictures with the metadata that would bring up the right things when people are searching by Google, I actually had earlier this year a request from it was from the Estee Lauder companies to use my tote bags for a sales meeting. So they put in an order, and they found me through Etsy and through like a Google image search. I'm not ready to give up Etsy just because I think that it has a lot of good value for people searching. But right now it's kind of a mix between the two. I'd like it to shift to where my website was the main one.
No, I would think it would make sense, yeah, to keep both, because even though Etsy has been changing over the years, and I definitely get what you were saying about that before, if it's still driving the traffic and sales and you are finding those people that appreciate a truly handmade item, I'm sure it makes sense to keep it up until it completely dies or something, the Etsy side. But so you said it's kind of gradual getting traffic to your new Shopify site. Are there, and I know you mentioned, like, if it gets mentioned on Instagram, but are there concrete ways where you're trying to get the word out about Shopify, or some plans in the works for the ways that you're going to try and drive more traffic to your Shopify website?
That's actually been one of probably my biggest struggles right now, is just that because I'm still the one sewing all of the bags, it feels like if I'm putting in the effort to get the word out there, and then I'm the one fulfilling the orders, it doesn't leave enough time for both. So my goal is actually to hire someone to start doing some of the sewing so that I can take that off my plate and kind of start more working on the business and not being the one that's actually producing, which is really difficult because I love sewing, so I don't want to give that up, but I also and very particular. I think it's a little bit of the probably engineering personality in me where, you know, I want someone to buy a product that will last them several years. And so I am very careful how I make the items, how I stitch the items. So just trying to find someone that would do that same quality is a little intimidating to me.
You should hire our mom. She's an excellent seamstress.
Well, I'll just have to have our next move be to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's right. Perfect.
Oh, there's lots of rivers in Pittsburgh. I'm sure there'll be a bridge somewhere.
Yeah, Pennsylvania has a lot of work, but they already have like a full team out there, so.
Well, I know, too, speaking of that, I'm sure that would be so hard to start that process of outsourcing some of the sewing and teaching someone else to do as excellent of work as you do. I know, I feel like when we interviewed Rebecca Smith, she was saying that she started by just having one person do, it was like one aspect of her bags. So, like, they would just maybe cut things out or something like that. And then
yeah, I thought it was like the inside of the bag.
Yeah. And then they would, sew the inside of the bag. And so then once they had like a lot of experience with that, and she was like, okay, they're doing great. This is great. And then they would, you know, just add like more and more of the parts of the bag. So
I think it's like anything you do where it's that the first step is the hardest. And then, you know, once you can get over that hurdle. So I think it's once you can hire one person, hiring more is probably a lot easier. And the other hard part is I know that we'll move in a year, so it's finding the right person that would be okay with that. And then when we move, you know, really start that search early on and get that established.
That would be tricky, adding the moving layer on top of that as well. That would be really tricky. Is it hard to find seamstresses in general? I could see that being, I don't want to call it a dying art because I think it's definitely seeing a resurgence, like just a resurgence back to handmade crafts in general and people interested in developing some crafts and skills in that way. But on the other hand, back 100 years ago, every woman knew how to sew. And today, the vast majority have never probably touched a sewing machine. So is it difficult in general just to track down like a seamstress or somebody who knows how to sew?
I think that's probably a word of mouth. Like I actually have the name of someone that I need to contact, and it was a friend of a friend situation. And I think the other hard part is just finding someone that is willing to do a little bit more almost contract work where it wouldn't necessarily be regular hours. So for me, it's just trying to figure out like what the right fit would be as far as who I would be working with and that relationship, even the logistics of getting fabric to someone. Do they come, because right now everything is run out of our house, so do they come here and, you know, work on a machine or cut fabric? So it's all of those things to decide.
Yeah, that's a lot of logistics to figure out for sure.
In terms of social media, Kim, is there one in particular that's the biggest traffic driver for you?
I'd say that probably the one that I'm the most active on, and I think it's just because it's my personal preference and it's the one that I enjoy the most is probably Instagram. And I think that's just because I'm a really visual person, and so I like the idea of almost taking your Instagram feed and creating a whole board of inspiration. So that's the one that I'm the most active on. I'm not as great with Facebook, and I think, again, it's just that there's only so much room on my plate, and so I try to pick and choose the ones that, like, I enjoy and I feel like I get a good interaction with. So for me right now, that pick is Instagram.
I feel like we've seen a trend over the past 6 to 12 months of, you know, talking with other shop owners, and man, product-based businesses just seem to be finding that they're getting the most impact by using Instagram. So, you know, versus I think bloggers are still very much using Pinterest, and Pinterest is awesome too, but Instagram seems to be where product-based businesses are kind of hanging out.
And I like Pinterest too a lot. That's probably another. I know that my blog still gets a good amount of traffic from Pinterest, and I actually had in our last house, it was like a 100-year-old cottage style house with the black and white checkered floor and butcher block countertops, and so I had this, it was an IKEA dresser that I painted and took a picture and ended up on the apartment therapy there, the kitchen, that part of apartment therapy, so I still get a lot of traffic from Pinterest to there. And I do think Pinterest is great for, you know, product and people searching and pinning.
That was really cool, though, that your photo got picked up by apartment therapy. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's amazing how much, I mean, just having that, and then once that starts, I think the nice thing with Pinterest, and I guess the biggest difference when you look at Pinterest and Instagram and being both very visual, I think that Pinterest, the material obviously gets cycled a lot more. And so if you have something that starts to get pinned, you know, you can quickly have several thousand pins. So I think, you know, Pinterest is a very strong tool, probably stronger than Instagram for that reason. But then Instagram, you get the interaction that you can't have on Pinterest, which I think then on Facebook, you can have more conversation that lasts. So I think they each have their own different strengths. And I think it just comes down to, you know, if you have someone running your social media or if you're doing it yourself and how much time you have for that.
Yeah, that's true. It all takes time for sure. And they all do have their strengths as well. Speaking of your blog on your site, I know that a lot of product-based businesses, especially people who maybe have an Etsy shop at first, and they're considering maybe adding a blog to help drive the traffic, but they're not sure how to incorporate a blog with a product-based business. So I'm wondering if, do you have ideas or what do you blog about since you're a product-based business? And is your blog contributing to your overall business model and business success?
I think that the blog is really good as far as keeping fresh content, and I think it's a way to get, you know, kind of the geeky stuff, the more like meta tags. If someone does the Google image searches, that they can find your product. But I think that you really have to be focused and have your specific thing that you're going to talk about to be really successful. So if I had completely unlimited time, I probably would focus more on kind of the DIY tutorials, sewing. I love to, you know, do home projects. I've ripped out vanities in our house, and we laid hardwood floors in this house. So, I mean, we're, you know, but it's just, it's really to do those tutorials is, they're very involved time-wise. And so I think if you're going to have a handmade business where you're really involved in making a product and trying to do a blog where you're doing heavy tutorials, I think it's just understanding the amount of time that would take to do both. I know that other handmade businesses have, you know, their focus for their blog is kind of the behind the scenes or even kind of how to as far as running a handmade business. I feel like I was much more active or busier on my blog several years ago, and now just keeping up with the business, I haven't done that as much. But I also feel like blogs aren't as big as they used to be, so.
Do you think that, I mean, I know you mentioned the meta tags and things like that, so you do feel like your blog does contribute and add to your sales and your business growth in some way?
I think anything that you can do that just keep fresh content out there. Right now, I mean, I have where, you know, when I released some new totes, I did a post about that and put several pictures in. So, you know, just trying to keep fresh content, I think, is the biggest thing. And then if someone happens to stumble upon, because my blog is LucyJaneTotes.com, if someone stumbles upon that, my biggest goal is just to not have a post that's too old so that, you know, it still looks like the company is fresh and alive, and then clear links to go onto my shop or social media where you can see me more active.
Speaking of the name, how did you come up with Lucy Jane? If your name is Kim, I kept wanting to in our email exchanges to call you Lucy. I had to remind myself to call you Kim.
I know. Everyone, it's funny because I'll get all these emails, hey, Lucy, and then people apologize when I reply, you know, thanks, Kim. And they'll apologize, and I think, well, I'm the one that named a company a name, and that's not mine. So we originally were going to have, I think, like a whole slew of kids was kind of the original idea. And then we ended up with twin boys and a difficult pregnancy and sleep deprivation and all kinds of stuff. And so we said that we were very content with two healthy kids. And we always had that if we had a girl, her name would be Lucy Jane. And then Jane is actually my mom's name, which I think is, you know, kind of a lot of inspiration in my life and influence. And so the name Lucy Jane kind of came about. And when I first started, because I was doing, you know, kind of some kids' clothes and other items, I felt like the Lucy Jane translated to both, you know, the bags and the clothing. And I've thought several times to change it, but I have it trademarked and I feel like it's out there, so I don't know if it's sort of worth at this point to change to something different.
I like it. Yeah. I think you should keep it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's really cute. I think it's a really cute name, and it's catchy, and I think it's easy to remember.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like anything creative that you do. When you first do it, you think, oh my gosh, this is the best thing ever. And then you look at it the next day, and you think, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing I've ever created. And then you look at it the next day, and you think, okay, this is actually really good. I think it's a whole like creative process that you have to go through whenever, you know, I'll redesign my website and like 3 days later look at it and think, I don't like this at all. But I think it's just because you, like, you're staring at it so much. So even with making the bags, I usually will make one up, kind of step away from it, and then go back to it. And it's like, okay, I do like this or I don't like this kind of creative process, at least for me. And maybe that's just like a odd character trait, I don't know.
No, I don't think you're odd. I'm sure many creatives feel the same way. When you're putting something out there that you did, you question, well, I know we've felt that same way about different stuff that we've done. This is the best thing ever. Everyone's going to buy it. This is the worst thing ever. Nobody's going to buy it. Mm-hmm. And then back and forth it goes. And you just have to kind of let it go in the end. It'll do what it does, and people will like it or they won't, and there you go.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Before I forget, too, I wanted to ask you, on your website, you said you do all the photos, but most of the photos are of you holding your bag. Yeah. But you look really cute holding your bag, but how do you do that?
I laugh because I've always been kind of a twiggy figure, and so I joke, I'm like, it's finally paid off to be a little beanpole. So I actually do all of the pictures myself, totally by myself. And so I set up a tripod, and I have my camera set up with a remote, which occasionally, if you look very closely at the pictures, you can actually catch me with a remote in my hand. I try to hide it. And then I tether my camera to my iMac, and I have where the pictures are automatically put into Lightroom. And so when I take the picture, I can see how it looks. And then, like, I'll snap the several different positions of holding the bag. And then a lot of times I'll go ahead and edit the picture, and I'll immediately upload it into Shopify, just more like in a preview mode where no one else can see it. Because I think sometimes, too, when you edit the pictures and then you actually put them on the website, like the white balance will look a little bit different, and then I'll go back. And so once I get the white balance correct and the all of the editing correct, I set Lightroom up so that whenever the picture, when I snap it, it will automatically apply all those edits to the next picture. So it's kind of, I think it's a little bit of my engineering personality that, like, always is looking for the most sort of the most efficient way to do something. And so all of those pictures are me, and I do, yeah, most people are like, so who does your pictures?
It sounds like you have quite the technical process set up with how you test it and make sure everything's just right. So then you can just go through and take a bunch of photos all at one time, and you know they'll all turn out to have the right look and feel that you were going for.
Yes.
Without having to edit them a ton of times.
Yeah, I used to take all of the pictures, and then I would sit down at the computer and I would edit them, only to find out that, you know, something was off. And so I figured out, oh, I could just tether it directly to my computer. So as I'm taking them, so I just found that saved a lot of time and a lot of kind of that extra after editing.
Okay, so maybe this is the most stupidest question you will ever receive. But what do you mean by tether it to your computer? Because I'm not sure I know that lingo.
No, it's not a stupid question at all. So it's on most cameras. So I have a Nikon D700, which is actually a full-frame camera. So it's sort of like just a little step below a professional camera. So it's a really, really nice camera. But it has, and I think all cameras have this, it's the like mini USB port. And so then you just get a USB cord that will connect your camera directly to your computer through a USB port. And then if you have the Lightroom software, which I do, the Adobe Creative Cloud, which essentially it's like a $10 a month subscription for Lightroom and Photoshop. If you have that, one of the features, you can start a tether, I think it's called, where basically when you go to take the picture with your camera, it doesn't actually show up in the screen on the back. It shows up on the computer.
Okay, so it just heads straight to Lightroom.
Yes, and then that also keeps all of the clutter from your desktop. When you're taking the pictures just with the memory card, and then I was loading them onto the desktop and then loading them into Lightroom, I felt like I was getting just a million pictures on my computer, and I couldn't tell which ones were the good ones, which ones delete them. So I figured out that this kind of solved that. And then the other tool that I use is Dropbox. I don't know
we use Dropbox.
So then I take the pictures and I export them, and a lot of times I'll export as a square. And so all of my pictures on my website, the Shopify site, are all set up as a square. And then for Instagram, it's already cropped properly. So then I have a whole collection of pictures to choose from if I want to put pictures on Instagram. So most of my pictures on Instagram, a portion are taken with my camera, and then a portion are taken with my phone. Just depends on the lighting.
Okay, so you can pull from Dropbox to post onto Instagram, so you can pull some good, like, some, I don't mean good, I'm sure your other Instagram photos are also good, but you can pull like your studio quality pictures into your Instagram feed.
Okay. Yes.
And does Lightroom, it's a photo storage in addition to a photo editing, or is it Lightroom is photo storage and Photoshop's the photo editing? Or
so Lightroom is more, I struggle with Photoshop because I think I somehow over-edit, and at the end I think, I have no idea what this picture actually was supposed to look like. So I kind of go overboard with Photoshop. I haven't figured it out, but Photo or Lightroom, I feel, is more like what the name says, sort of your exposure and your white balance. And so all of my photo editing I do in Lightroom, but it also stores your pictures. So even if you make, and I think this is the biggest difference between Photoshop, even if you make all of your edits, it will save the original. So you don't lose your original. You always have that. So even if you, like if you crop a picture, so you can crop it to a 1x1, export that, and then you can crop it as like a 4x6, export that.
Okay, nice. And you said that the combination is only like $10 a month or something like that through Adobe Creative Cloud?
Yes, Adobe Creative Cloud. And then that, also the nice thing is it always gives you the latest, and then it can be, so I have Lightroom on my MacBook, I have it on my iMac, and you can actually have it on your iPad too. They don't necessarily talk to each other, but then you can use Dropbox or, you know, through the AirDrop, you can share files too.
Well, Kim, as we wrap up today, we always like to ask if you have either a funny or adorable mom moment to share with us. I'm sure with two twin boys, there's a lot of funny stuff going on at your house.
They are a handful all the time. They're kind of a giggle factory. But I think a mom endearing moment was, it was later one night, I was working down in my sewing room, and our one Teddy came downstairs, and he's the king of stalling for bedtime, so he finds anything to talk about. And so he started talking about how he was going to create a hole punching department for Lucy Jane, because when I get my tags that I put on my products, you have to punch the little hole to tag them. And so he got out a hole puncher and was showing me how efficient he is at hole punching and how he can have this whole department, and that I should ask my customers if they'd like custom hole punching done. And so I think for me it was kind of that endearing moment where, one, it was a little funny and odd, and also it was kind of his way of creating like his space within what I was doing, which made me feel really special that, you know, he sees what I'm doing every day and he sees my business, and in his own way was creating like his space within that.
That's super cute. And I love too how he phrased it as a department. Like he was going to be the head of the department.
He followed up the next day by asking me if I had made anything to let my customers know about his hole punching department and the custom orders, and he'd come up with even newer ideas, which I don't know if I don't know if he'll be an engineer or an entrepreneur, but my husband jokes around, he's like a mini me, and so.
That's sweet. Kim, can you tell everybody one more time where they can find you, both your Etsy shop and your Shopify site as well?
My Shopify site is www.lucyjaneshop.com. And then my Etsy site is lucyjanetotes.etsy.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. We definitely learned some new things.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
After all of that great photography advice that Kim had for us, does it make you want to just dive into the photography in your own Etsy shop or even the photography on your blog and really hone that skill and make your photography awesome? Did you check out Kim's website so that you knew what we were talking about with those beautiful photographs that she did all by herself? Well, if you're looking for more photography advice, I don't know if you noticed, but on the sidebar of brilliantbusinessmoms.com, Bethian created all these beautiful categories along the right-hand side so that you can find interviews and tips related to certain topics that we tend to cover frequently or that our interviewees tend to cover frequently. And one of those categories is photography tips. So if you wanted to brush up on some of the best tips that other interviewees have given us in regard to photography, you can just head straight over to that section, which you'll find in the right sidebar with those beautiful category images over there. And you can check out those interviews that cover the topic of photography, at least in some part during the interview. It's a great way to kind of refresh in your mind some of the tips that you've heard, but maybe you haven't had a chance to implement them yet, and you can go back through and listen again to those tips. And I do feel like when I hear something twice, it really sticks with me much more than hearing it just once. For instance, when we're going through these interviews and we conduct the interviews, I'm hearing all of the answers once. But when we go through the interviews and listen again during the editing process or the show notes process, I really feel like that solidifies, in my mind at least, the information that that interviewee told us. It really then, hearing it a second time, really helps it to stick in my mind and I can remember it long term. So if you need a refresher on photography tips, check out our photography section. And I also wanted to mention, Kim uses Adobe Creative Cloud, and we actually use a lot of Adobe Creative Cloud products as well. And she mentioned that she uses it on a Mac, but we have PCs, and we also use the Creative Cloud products. So if you were thinking, oh no, she just said Mac, I can't use Creative Cloud, that's not the case. We use Creative Cloud for PC. And if you're looking for the show notes to maybe read some of the tips that Kim gave us, you can find the show notes at brilliantbusinessmoms.com/106. I hope you're having a great day. Now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.